out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday, the 5th of February, 2018. It's the start of a new week. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. As it's Monday, we are graced with the presence of Jez Turner from the London Forum. Jez, how are you doing today?
Greetings to you all. Indeed, you are graced to have me on your radio show. I'm pleased to be here.
We certainly are, and we certainly enjoy your input here at the Daily Nationalist, and so do our commenters and our listeners, and we were unable to get you last Monday, so very pleased to have you back this week. And I know you've got lots that you've got to go into, and starting with on this day in history, I believe.
Yes, earth-shattering events on this day in history. On this day in AD 62 was the earthquake in Pompeii. So, interesting. Interesting book by Bulwer Lytton, The Fall of Pompeii, all about that. On this day, 1428, now this is interesting, King Alfonso V of Aragon, who also ruled Sicily, he passed a decree saying that all Jews on Sicily must attend conversion sermons, right? So they had to be, you know, start the process of becoming Christian. Now, they weren't forced to become Christian or leave until 1492, when good Queen Isabella and King Ferdinand gave them that option. Leave Sicily or convert. 9,000 converted, the rest left and went to the Ottoman Empire. But a lot went to Calabria or Naples. Now, we all know that organized crime, serious organized crime, is Jewish. We all know this. But often people say, no, well, maybe it is, maybe they are, maybe the Russian mafia is all Jews, maybe the American organized crime is all Jews. But what about the Italian mafia? This is the one exception. Well, interesting point to note, right? Sicilian Jews, 9,000 converted to Christianity, and the rest went to Calabria or Naples. Well, which are the three areas in Italy where the Italian mafia is strongest? Calabria, Naples, and Sicily. So, interesting thought to throw out there. Is the Italian mafia merely made up of conversos, Maranos, and crypto Jews? Interesting. One to think about. Moving on. On this day, 1945, Churchill arrived at Yalta for the Yalta Conference in the Crimea, and God help all the anti-communists who the British and the Americans handed over to the Soviets because of that conference. 1953, sweet rationing ends in Britain. 1953, Britain was so much in debt due to World War II, so much destroyed in an economic sense, that sweet rationing did not end until 1953. Moving forwards to 1994. On this day, 1994, the longest criminal case in US history ended with a conviction of Byron de la Beckwith for the murder of Medgar Evers. Medgar Evers, he was an official in the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. This is a Jewish-funded pressure group that pressures to stop whites living among whites. Now, he was shot dead in 1963, and 1994, that's 30 odd years later, this white man was convicted of his murder, convicted by a majority black jury. Now, let's not forget, this man This was his third trial. And this is what the Jews do. If they don't get what they want, they try again, and they try again until they do. When Medgar Evers was shot dead, the area in which he lived was partly white, partly black area. And his wife said she hated all whites. She wanted to mow them all down. But of course, by 1993, it was a majority black area. So the jury had changed. So who was this Byron Della Beckwith? Well, he was a descendant of the old Southern aristocracy. He was a Southern gentleman. He was a normal family man, white family man. But he was radicalized by reality. Now, a lot of the liberals say, oh, you know, this white chap was radicalized by the internet in 3 weeks. No. Whites get radicalized by reality. They hear the truth, they hear what's really going on, and they get radicalized. And what radicalized him was a court case, Brown versus the Educational Board, 1954, I think it was. And this federal U.S. government, this made federal government forced all white schools and Negro schools in America to merge, to no more white schools. You know, they had to accept blacks and all the chaos that went with that. So what did he do? The next day, Byron Della Beckwith, he joined the White Citizens Council, like all good white men did. It was a middle-class organization, and this organization is the organization that the father of the girl in Harper Lee's To Kill a Mockingbird and Ghost of the Watchman goes and joins. So he joins that, and he becomes radicalized, and he wakes up, sees what's going on, and he became a Christian identity, became a believer in Christian identity, and he joined the Phineas priesthood. Is that right, Sven?
Phineas priesthood. Yeah. Phineas was given an eternal priesthood for spearing through two race mixers while they were copulating, and God rewarded him with an eternal priesthood. So that's where the title of the Phineas priesthood comes from. I believe it was a Christian identity sect back in the 60s. I don't know if it's still going, but that's the origin of the name and why it's called the Phineas priesthood. I was just wondering there, what about double jeopardy? And that's triple jeopardy, isn't it? The Jews put the trial through three times?
Look, they overturned every legal precedent, every law, every safeguard was overturned to get a conviction. What they wanted was a white man convicted, and any white man would do as long as he was politically incorrect. This man, as soon as the shooting happened, as happens, the police raided known white patriots, and they went to his house. He was 90 miles away from the scene of the shooting. 90 miles away. They went to his house. They got to his house about an hour later, just under an hour later, and he was 90 miles away on Mississippi back roads. Now that's not possible. He didn't carry out this shooting. He's an innocent man, right? This is has echoes actually of the Stephen Lawrence murder in 1993. They kept dragging in white boys and trying to find them guilty, and eventually 20 years later, they convicted David Norris and Gary Dobson on concocted evidence and cross-contamination of DNA, all kinds of things. And lots of hand-wringing and teeth-gnashing by liberals with the McPherson report on police behavior. Basically, Stephen Lawrence was killed by a black drug gang, but the black guy with him made it all up to avoid him being killed by the gang as well, you know, stop him giving evidence, so to speak. But anyway, so this Byron Della Beckwith was convicted. This is the longest running case in US legal history so far. And he died aged, I think, about 80 years old in a prison in 2001. Always maintaining his innocence. His family always maintained his innocence. And interestingly enough, W.E.B. Bois, some sort of colored Jewish U.S. academic, very light-skinned black academic, a campaigner for black power. He said, when an aristocracy allows the mob to rule the fault lies not with the mob. Now, I don't know what he meant by that, but I know what I mean by that. And W.E. and Byron de la Beckwith was a white man, and he was an aristocrat, and he did his bit. So we remember him today. Moving on through history, what else do we have? Well, 1997. Now, this was the day when Switzerland was blackmailed by the World Jewish Congress. Does this ring a bell? World Jewish Congress blackmailing, threatening, boycotting countries? Yes, under threat of Jewish sanctions, Swiss banks agreed to set up a $250 million US dollar fund to pay Jewish families who lost savings in World War II. The Swiss president accused international Jewry, led by the World Jewish Congress, of blackmailing Switzerland. And this is what happened. Basically, the Jews were putting pressure on Switzerland. We want money. We want reparations for the Holocaust. Switzerland was neutral, but hey, you know, apparently Jews had lots of money in bank accounts in Switzerland, and they, I don't know, didn't claim them or whatever. They died in the Holocaust or whatever. So at a lunchtime meeting on the 9th of December, in the private dining room of Edgar Bronfman, who was the head of Seagram. This was in the Seagram building on 375 Park Avenue, Manhattan, New York. This is how things get done. Private dining rooms, private meetings. Edgar Bronfman, head of the World Jewish Congress, Israel Singer, World Jewish Congress secretary, gave their final ultimatum to the Swiss banks and their representative, Thomas Borer. Do what we Jews tell you to do and give us your money and lots of it, or the Jews will destroy Switzerland. You must issue a declaration of intent that you will give us the money by the 5th of February 1997, or else. So this caused a lot of consternation among the Swiss government and Swiss banks, as you might think, because this was just unheard of. You know, why should the Jews get money? Why not other people get money? I mean, why only the Jews? You know?
Surely, when people die, if there aren't any people that are named in the will, doesn't the money go to the bank? Isn't that just the normal procedure? And I would question whether it was actually Jews' money they were after. They were probably after German money that was in the banks that the Swiss were holding on to. What was the specifics of it, Jess?
Well, this is very strange because, look, Swiss banks are very efficient. You know, as you say, they don't just steal your money. They give it to your descendants. They give it to, you know, things are done properly. And but this was all steamrolled over. Jean-Pascal Delamoraz, God bless this man, the outgoing president of Switzerland, hero of the white race. On giving his last interview, published in the French language Tribune of Geneva, on the 31st of December, 1996. So remember, the deadline is 5th of February, 1997. And he was outgoing. And he gave his last parting shot, his Parthian shot. In this interview, he accused the World Jewish Congress of extortion and blackmail. And rather humorously said, "Sometimes, listening to these Jews, I wonder whether or not Auschwitz is in Switzerland." Oh, well, he was leaving office, so he didn't give a damn, you know. Quite frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
That reminds me of Poland. You know, in Poland, Poland have just brought a law out banning anyone from blaming the Poles for doing any Holocausting. They've preempted the Jews, claiming money from them.
Oh, Poland will be in trouble, won't it? Another World Jewish Congress boycott, no doubt. So these comments by the president caused absolute uproar, you know, outcries of anti-Semitism. How dare he talk about a belief in a Jewish conspiracy? Well, forgive me, but listeners at home, but if Jewish organizations threaten to destroy a country's economy, destroy a country, unless they get money, then isn't that a conspiracy? No, perhaps not. Anyway, the Swiss government realized it was in trouble, so it apologized on the 14th of January to the World Jewish Congress, and it begged for forgiveness. It begged for forgiveness. Oh, and The World Jewish Congress said, yes, yes, we'll accept your apology, but now we want more money. We want more than just that measly $250 million. We want more. And, yes, listeners, as of the 31st of December, 2015, so far, $1.28 billion have been paid to the Israeli Banking Trust on behalf of half a million claimants. And that's so far. Probably the figure is nearer to $1.5 billion now. There we are. A bit of resistance from the Swiss, but in the end, they caved in.
Shocking. Yes. Shocking. So basically the Israelis are saying, well, because they're Jews, then the money must go to us, or we've lost the ID details for these people, but because they're Jews,
just give us lots of money and we'll sort it out, chaps.
Just a
shakedown. Don't worry about the details.
what was the threats they were making? Do you know when they were blackmailing them? What was the threats they were actually making to them?
Ah,
to shut down
they were going to boycott Swiss banks, boycott the economy. You know, this is what the Jews did to Germany, didn't they? They did a boycott. Basically, look, you know, Switzerland. A lot of its economy depends on tourism, depends on finance, really. You know,
all the things they've banned universities in Britain from doing to Israel. They're not allowed to boycott Israel at all, are they? The universities in Britain. They're not allowed to.
Well, the Jews can boycott us if they want to, can't they? That's a funny old thing, isn't it, eh? Now, actually, let's have a quiz. Your listeners at home now. Know your homelands. Which part of Germany does not accept the euro? Which part of Germany does not accept the euro? The answer is Busingen am Hochrhein, on the High Rhine. Konstanz, Baden-Württemberg. Population 2,000. Coat of arms, a grape cluster. It's a German exclave. In other words, an enclave entirely surrounded by Switzerland. They accept the Swiss franc. And another quiz, another question for the quiz here. We must have a few questions on the Swiss franc here. What is the smaller denomination of the Swiss franc? What's it made up of? 100
cent.
Of them?
Is it a cent?
No. You can be, but officially it's the Rappen. The Rappen. Depending on the language in which part of Switzerland you are. The language on the coins and the notes is the Latin. But what is the
I'm
most
sure
valuable?
I called it a cent. I've been to Switzerland, and I'm sure I called it a cent.
It'll be okay. They'll know what you mean, but it's not the official
right,
term.
Okay.
You know? I mean, the official symbol for the Swiss franc is not the SF, it's the CHF, Confederatio Helvetica Franc.
Yes, yeah.
And when you were in Switzerland, Sven, did you ever come across the most valuable single denomination banknote?
I can't remember. So many years back.
It is a 1,000 Swiss franc note. It's violet and it's worth 1,000 Swiss francs, which is worth £750.
Right,
that's the most valuable denomination banknote.
Probably not if it was that much, worth that much.
Not bad. Give me a few
it.
Of those. Give me a few of those. Donate your 1,000 Swiss franc notes to Radio Aaron. On the cover of this note is depicted the face of Jacob Burckhardt, cultural historian, lived in the 19th century. His famous book was The Civilization of the Renaissance in Italy. And he was unimpressed by democracy, by individualism, by socialism, by feminism, and all the other liberal claptrap.
How wonderful to see him honoured with a very pricey banknote then.
Good
for
him.
That's not very politically correct, is it?
Yeah, and he said the state borrows money and forces its citizens and their descendants to pay the debt. So he said, alongside all swindlers, the state now stands there as swindler in chief. Not a bad chap. Final question for the quiz. Where is the Swiss franc legal tender? So you can get it. You can use it in Busingen, that place I mentioned, Busingen am Hochrhein. But where is it officially legal tender?
In Switzerland, the Swiss franc. I don't know that they use euros there, do they?
Switzerland, yes, Swiss franc is legal tender in Switzerland. No euros there. Where else? Two more countries.
Ooh. Well, you see, when you said it was a German exclave, I was thinking, well, there's a German part, there's an Italian part. I think there's a French part.
Good, good.
Because good they speak all these different languages. They're very clever people, the Swiss. They all speak four or five different languages because the country itself has four different languages, I think. I think it might even have one language, Roma language as well. A fifth language.
Yeah, German, Swiss, French, and Romagna.
That's the one.
You're on the right track there. Liechtenstein also accepts the Swiss franc. It's the official currency. And also Campione d'Italia, which is an Italian exclave, province of Como, Lombardy, on the shores of Lake Como up there. And it's completely surrounded by the Swiss canton of Ticino, and its coat of arms is a snail. There we go.
Is now, that for the French? It's not the French one, is it? I was thinking it's the French one with the snail for the coat of arms.
French, they're Italian, but they like the snails. Now, today is a very special day. It is St. Agatha's Day. She's the patron saint of jewelers, bakers, and nurses. She's the Virgin Martyr of Catania, Sicily. So they're having a big, big religious festival there today, 5th of February. Also in the Basque heartlands, they do door-to-door carol singing in honor of St. Agatha. She's the patron saint of Malta. She's also the patron saint of another small country, one of the smallest nations in Europe, the most serene Republic of San Marino. Right, this is an independent state in a mountainous region of Italy near the Adriatic coast of Rimini. And it's a national holiday there today. So hello, San Marino. Now, some interesting facts about San Marino. I've got to tell you these are pretty interesting, right? It's the oldest extant sovereign state. It's the oldest constitutional republic, founded in AD 301 by Marinus, a stonemason who became Saint Marinus. And its flag is three towers of Mount Titano. It's ruled by two captains regent, which are like Roman consuls elected every 6 months by the nation's parliament. But some really interesting facts about San Marino. It has no national debt. No national debt. It has a budget surplus every year. It has the lowest unemployment in Europe. It has the highest GDP, highest living standards, gross domestic product. It is all white. Only white people live there. And it has no Jews. Think about those facts now. There have been some links there, perhaps. Some links with all that. No crime either. No crime.
Do they have any official laws to prevent Jews being there? Or you would think that the Jews would have homed in on
that. There probably are a couple, you know, have moved in there. But, you know, there's no synagogues or anything. It's all very...
Wow.
Probably a few secular Jews, you know, move there, whatever, live there. But interesting place. In 1923, the Samarinese Fascist Party came to power in 1923, and they ruled to 1943, led by Giuliani Goizi, or Gozzi.
20 years. That's a good shot at it, isn't it? 20 years.
They were interesting because on their symbol, they have the three towers of Titano. And they also have the word liberty on their badge, on their flag. You know, the fascist party have liberty because that's the motto of this nation. And the nation was neutral during World War II. Their leader, he held the Victoria Cross, which was Italian gold medal, which is even rarer than the Victoria Cross. Yeah, so that's an interesting little country, you know.
I'd never heard of it before, I don't think. Good. I don't think I'd even heard of it before.
San Marino.
Beautiful
little place.
Fascist state for 20 years that didn't join in the Second World War, that doesn't have any Jews, that has the highest GDP today. It's fascinating, isn't it?
Well, listeners, look, you've got to know your homelands. You've got to know about Europe. You've got to know about the wide world. And I suggest you want to go for a holiday, go to San Marino, you know. Go to these places, really look into the history, real history. And talking of real history, on this day, in 1881, Thomas Carlyle died. Who was Thomas Carlyle? Well, he was the Sage of Chelsea. You've heard of the Sage of Baltimore, Henry Mencken. Well, Thomas Carlyle was a Briton, lived in London, in Chelsea, in West London. And he was a philosopher, a historian, a social commentator, and a mathematician. The Carlyle circles are a way of solving quadratic equations. He devised them. But he has the accolade of being the most quoted, the most approving mentions, most quoted British author in Adolf Hitler's Mein Kampf. If you read Mein Kampf, Hitler often refers to Thomas Carlyle in approving words. In the dying days of 1945, Joseph Goebbels read Thomas Carlyle's History of Frederick the Great to Hitler. Now, Thomas Carlyle, he wrote history books, he wrote philosophy sort of books on heroes and hero worship. He wrote that. He wrote The History of the French Revolution, which inspired Charles Dickens to write A Tale of Two Cities. He wrote an interesting book with an interesting title called The Nigger Question. He also helped set up the National Portrait Gallery of England and of Scotland, and also the London Library, because the British Library was just too crowded, too busy. Nothing changes. It still is too busy and too crowded. And this new Tesco headquarters in King's Cross, it resembles a crowded Tesco's inside. But he was an interesting man. A few interesting quotes from Thomas Carlyle for you. He called economics the dismal science. He said, "The history of the world is but the biography of great men. Only the heroic dynamic, only such heroes can master chaotic events and direct spiritual energies effectively." He said that prosperity is more dangerous than adversity. And he did not like the Jews. William Hazlitt was appalled when he was stood with Thomas Carlyle in Green Park, and he looked at Spencer House, which the Rothschilds bought, and said, "There we have secret rulers, the usurers." You know, he believed courage was the highest virtue, and he had a famous painting by Millet actually that was attacked by a crazy feminist suffragette. Now, by the way, listeners, they're no longer to be called suffragettes. We've got to call them now suffragists. Okay, suffragists. That's the politically correct term, suffragists. And Radio Aaron is going to call them suffragettes.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And I was just going to say, Jonathan Bowden did a lecture on Thomas Carlyle as well.
I was there in the lecture hall, and I asked the question, what would Thomas Carlyle think of Hitler? Because Hitler thought so highly of Thomas Carlyle. And I can only say, Thomas Carlyle would have approved of Hitler. Hitler ticked all the boxes for Carlyle. Carlyle looked at reality and looked at it as it was, not how liberals wanted it to be. And on every topic, he was spot on, you know. There was a slave rebellion in Jamaica. You may have heard of it, the Morant Bay Slave Rebellion. And the blacks went on a rampage, raping, killing, torturing the whites and each other. And the governor of Jamaica was called Governor Edward Eyre, as in Jane Eyre, E-Y-R-E. And he put down this rebellion with some force. You know, lots of blacks were whipped, lots were executed. And he also executed the leader. The leader was a man called George William Gordon, who was a mixed-race Jamaican assemblyman, and he basically organized it. And when this assemblyman was executed, the liberals in Britain went ballistic, you know, as they do, you know. And they demanded that this Governor Eyre be prosecuted for putting down this rebellion. Well, Thomas Carlyle said, This is no good. I'm gonna help this guy. So he set up the Gordon Eyre Defense and Aid Committee. And they rallied to his defense. On this committee, you've got some very good people. You've got John Ruskin, the art historian. You've got Charles Dickens, author of Oliver Twist. You've got Alfred Tennyson, the famous poet laureate. You've got Charles Kingsley, author of The Water Babies. And you have John Tyndall. Now, this is, everyone goes, whoa, hang on a minute, John Tyndall, that was before his time. He wasn't even born then, you know. Well, this John Tyndall was a famous physicist, famous scientist, very popular in the day, lived from 1820 to 1893. And, you know, he was a good guy. Another quote by
Was he able to defuse the liberal thing? Did he get the guy off with this big committee?
Yes.
Of famous people?
Yes. As far as I'm aware, they did, yes. Excellent. You know, it just goes to show the Liberals have all the money all the time. You know, they've got Jewish banks on their side. They've got Jewish this and that. You know, the mass media even back then. But a few good men who, you know, do what's right can
get together and change things. We've only got we've only got 2 minutes left, Jez. But I would like to hear about your white hero of the week, if we could, just before we finish.
Yes, let's have 80-year-old Rosemary Bodger from Crouch End, North London. She saw a white man on his scooter being attacked by a bunch of thugs who were trying to steal his scooter, and she ran in there and screamed and shouted what women do, you know, that's what they're there for, like a siren, police siren. And some builders came running up with metal poles to save him and scare off the muggers. So there she is, 80-year-old Rosemary Bodger. She says, I'm not, she's a white woman. She's got old values, and she saw something bad happening. She got in there and saved the day. So well done to her.
I can just see her beating them off with an umbrella and a handbag. Just see it in my mind's eye.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah, there's a good picture there. Let me end with a quote by Thomas Carlyle. The great man comes out of heaven like a bolt of lightning. The rest of men wait for him like fuel, and then they too take fire. There we are, hallowed fire.
Okay. Thank you very much for coming on, Jez. I'll be back tomorrow with Nat Danelaw. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. God bless and hail victory.